Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mary and Melissa Show. This is Mary Dolan, and I'm speaking to you from Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. And as you know, the Mary and Melissa Show is a proud project of Inclusion Zone, which is one of the spanking new 501c3s christened by the IRS. Thank you very much, our government bureaucracy, for funneling that paperwork through. And we are a 501c3, which means that we are a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to serve the public, particularly parents of children with disabilities, but the public at large, to make sure that people with disabilities, especially the kids out there with disabilities, have an opportunity for full inclusion in life, in all areas of life. Today, we're going to have with us a gentleman named Mr. Daniel Lozen, and I'm really pleased. I just got in touch with him recently after reading about a report his organization put out, and I said, my goodness, we've got to get this gentleman on. Mr. Lozen is a former teacher, and I'm, as many of you might know, studying to be a teacher as a career shift, and so I was really delighted to hear that this gentleman who's writing about this topic of school suspensions that we're going to be talking about has spent many years in the classroom himself. But his current job is as the director of the Center for Civil Rights at the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. And they came out with a real ground-shaking report on the rates of school suspensions and the disparities in race and also disability. And I'd like to just take a moment to say that this is an issue that luckily is getting more and more attention from everyone in our nation. And one of the reasons is because of individuals like Daniel Lozen and his organization putting some good minds and research behind the statistics. So, Mr. Lozen, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Hear you 100%. Welcome on to the Mary and Melissa Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So I want to just get right to this report that your organization put out because, as you know, we're concerned about students with disabilities. We know that our students are not graduating from high school at the rate of kids without disabilities. We're not working as much as folks without disabilities. Rate of poverty is double, and on and on and on and on. One of the reasons that led me to want to focus my career in education is because I know that's where the rubber hits the road for kids with disabilities. So one of those issues is discipline. And so I would like to just start with what led you and your organization to want to spotlight this issue of school suspensions? What made it so compelling that you knew that this had to be something that you would spend a couple of years and considerable dollars looking into?
Well, we've been working on issues of racial inequity in education for many, many years. We started in 1996. And this issue came to light in part because we were looking at racial inequity in special education, looking at both identification as well as restrictiveness of placement and also discipline, but also with regard to our work on graduation rates. We were really concerned about vast numbers of students with disabilities, black and brown youth, who were starting high school and not graduating on time. And looking at the confluence of all these different inequities, and then also with regard to the juvenile justice system, looking at the high rates of incarceration. In America, we incarcerate more citizens than just about any other nation in the world. And then you look at the racial disparities there, and you look, then you find that the racial disparities are profound in the juvenile justice system. And you see that it's both along lines of race, but also disability status. So you see a really disproportionate number of kids with disabilities who are incarcerated in the juvenile justice system. And so, you know, one of the questions is how do these inequities sort of work together to make the problem so profound, and is there something that can be done about it? And so part of what we did, just before we issued this report, we also brought together researchers from across the country and published a book that's available on Amazon and through Teachers College Press called Closing the School Discipline Gap. And it really shows that there are viable alternatives to suspending and expelling students, especially for minor offenses. And that's, I think, one of the things that listeners should realize from the very beginning. Most of the kids who are suspended out of school are suspended for minor offenses, truancy, tardiness. There's no deterrent value there. They're not even, you know, if they're truant, they're not disrupting the classroom. But all kinds of minor offenses, dress code violations, disruption, disobedience, these are the vast majority of suspensions in most states. And the most serious offenses are, you know, very infrequent, usually around the 1% rate. In fact, our report concentrates on out-of-school suspensions. It does not include expulsions. So by its very nature, it excludes most of the really serious offenses, like kids bringing a firearm to school or something like that, or assaulting a teacher. So we're really talking about huge numbers, and that's another really surprising thing that just shocks the conscience. When we looked at the discipline data, you know, we found that, for example, kids with disabilities at the secondary level, so we looked at elementary and secondary, were not only about twice as likely as their non-disabled peers to be suspended out of school, but nearly one in five at the secondary level in 2011-12 were suspended at least one time. That really suggests that schools are failing their responsibility to meet the social and emotional and educational needs of students with disabilities. Of course, it varies tremendously from one district to the next and within school districts. And that's another important thing to remember, is that there are a lot of schools that are, in fact, more schools at elementary and secondary level are on the lower end of the suspending spectrum. And although there are some that are suspending incredibly high numbers of schools, there's states where 50% or more of the black students with disabilities at the secondary level were suspended out of school at least once, 50%. So when we look at race with disability, we also see these tremendous disparities that are just deeply disturbing and suggest that schools are just not meeting their obligation to educate all children.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that was quite stirring about your report, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this was the first time that this kind of data was compiled in this way. So this is really earth-shaking for our parents, our lawmakers, anyone who gives a hoot, to see this data in such stark black and white, so to speak. I don't mean to, no pun intended, but is that the case, that this was the first time this has been really
well,
put
yes
together
and
like
no.
This?
So yes, it's the first time we've had the data like this from every single school district in the nation that's been broken down. So in 09-10, we had about half the districts, and we did issue a report then. And historically, there has been data collected on kids generally and their suspension rates. So civil rights advocates have been aware of these disparities. But we also see that since the early 70s, suspension rates have expanded pretty dramatically, and especially for black kids and Latino kids and kids with disabilities. So, you know, we've seen this, what I call the tsunami of intolerance. And with this sort of, you know, kick out the quote-unquote bad kids so the good kids can learn kind of philosophy, we just have seen an explosion in the disparities as well. And I think, you know, most educators did not go into educate kids, you know, did not go into this profession thinking they're just going to, you know, kick kids out right and left, not if they're a public school teacher. So the good news is there's a lot of things that teachers and educators and principals can do. And, you know, so that's why it's important to realize that the status quo, as shocking and disturbing as it is there are alternatives right there at educators' fingertips. There are things they can do differently so that we can reject the status quo. We don't just have to sit there and look at this problem and say, well, what do we do about it? We have answers, and that is really important.
Mm-hmm. So, and just to clarify, so when we're talking about suspensions, you're talking about out-of-school suspensions, when you're told you can't come to school for X number of a day, 2 days, whatever it may be, as opposed to in-school suspension.
That's correct. So this is really, in some ways, just the tip of the iceberg, but it accounts for, in just 1 year, 18 million days, we estimate, of lost education, lost days of instruction, and that's just out-of-school suspension. Kids often who are suspended in school, depending on the quality of that in-school suspension, are also losing instruction. There may be some good programs, but we're very concerned that in most cases, kids are just sitting in a room somewhere with very little interaction with adults and very little support, academic, socially, or emotionally. So in both cases, we're concerned kids don't come back better equipped, you know, better behaved. They're further behind. They're more disengaged than they were before. And there is no research to suggest that just suspending a kid out of school or an in-school suspension in a kind of detention hall setting does anybody any good. All the research points to the opposite direction, that there are effective alternatives that involve more adult interactions but keep kids in school where they're learning, and if there are issues that around their behavior, that they're getting the support and education they need to be more successful in their school.
So let's just delve into some of these alternatives. You're saying status quo still seems to be, even though there are some schools that perhaps have embraced these alternatives to suspension more than others, but status quo still seems to be, okay, something's happened, maybe it's happened a couple of times, you're now suspended. So what are these alternatives that you're saying that schools need to embrace as an alternative to get out of school for the next day or two?
Right. So there's a huge range, and so there's several tools in the educator's toolkit. One of them is known as restorative practices, which really holds kids more accountable for their behavior and holds them accountable to either the person that they harmed or to atone for their actions in a way that's meaningful to the community. But it keeps them as part of the community. The value of restorative practices is that it also is very preventative in that it helps get at the root cause, and it shows a real caring for the individual student and why, and getting at the sort of why are they misbehaving. And it really starts in the classroom. So it's not, you don't have to wait for some major event. It really starts with a more problem-solving way to approach classroom management so that you're really enlisting the support and interest of the students. And most students really do want to learn in having a more effective classroom. As a former teacher, I can also tell you that developing classroom management skills and more effective teaching techniques brings you a huge distance to improving both the learning and the behavior in the classroom. So we can all probably recall that really good teacher that loved all the kids and everyone was engaged, and they probably had far less behavioral problems. And some of those techniques, you know, involve not escalating situations, not calling kids out for being disrespectful in the whole class when it could be better dealt with privately, after class or in the hallway. Working to get to know the students and their parents and have a real relationship that's positive early on in the year, so that when issues do arise, that you have a sort of a positive context to contact the parents and bring them in for a conference or work with a student so the student knows that you care about them because you've had plenty of positive interactions beforehand. One of the studies in the book is about a teacher training program where it was a randomized controlled study, which is sort of the scientific gold standard. Half the teachers in the district got the training, half didn't. And they saw that it almost eliminated racial disparities and dramatically reduced the numbers of referrals that teachers were making to the principal's office. But the training was all about improving the quality of student-teacher engagement in the classroom. So it wasn't even focused on discipline per se. So there's just a great, that's just, you know, the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely, and there's so much to be said for having that positive relationship, and to know that that the teacher and the parents and everybody's in this together. But I wanted to pivot a bit to students with disabilities specifically.
Sure.
Looking at this data, you know, I'm zeroing in on the double the rate of suspensions for kids with disabilities, and it just makes me think, well, of course, it's not, and maybe that's not available, it's not broken out by the type of disability, but it makes me wonder if schools are, you said it, you know, are they getting it? Do they understand these disabilities that these kids are presenting with? Because, you know, how much of the behaviors are part and parcel of their disability and might
right.
be out of control to manage or manage effectively. And so I wanted to get your, whether it's that's in the report or not, but your insights and, you know, your also personal experience from your classroom days.
So I've, you know, both been a teacher in the classroom and helped run a school. I've also, as a lawyer, represented students with disabilities in these kinds of, with regard to discipline issues. And I can tell you that, and the data really speak to this, I think, most strongly, that it suggests that many cases that students with disabilities are not having their educational needs met. And the law requires that you can't exclude a student because of their disability. So the most obvious example, a student with Tourette's syndrome who may be blurting things out, you can't suspend them, a student with Tourette's, for blurting out in class. A student with ADHD who may, you know, be jittery and tapping a lot and nervous and get, or not nervous, they have ADHD, it's not about nervousness, but where they're getting out of their seat more often or that sort of thing, that student shouldn't be suspended because of that behavior, because it's part of their disability, it's a manifestation of their disability. But what the research suggests is that, you know, how else do you explain the fact that across every racial group, at every grade level, students with disabilities are twice as likely as their non-disabled peers to be suspended out of school. So it really suggests that schools are not appropriately meeting the needs of kids with disabilities. And then when you do break it down by disability category, the one category that would most suggest that there would be a behavioral component is emotional disturbance. Well, kids, 33% of all students with emotional disturbance at every grade, this is K through 12, were suspended at least once out of school. And that's much higher than any other category of disability. So that really, you know, begs the question, are the kids with emotional disturbance having a behavioral improvement plan? Are they having their behavioral needs met adequately, or are they just being suspended because of their disability?
Absolutely, and then you don't, and you can suspend them up to, what is that, 10 days without a manifestation meeting. So I mean, that's still a lot of days that a kid could go without schooling.
That's right,
and
unfortunately, a lot of times there's a confusion between the due process requirement. So a school district has to have this hearing called the manifestation determination hearing if they suspend the student for a cumulative number of days, which is more than 10, or even just one time for more than 10 days. But let's say they have that hearing, they find the behavior was manifestation. Well, if it happens again next year and it's the same behavior, technically the school can still suspend the student, but absolutely they shouldn't. In other words, they should never suspend a student for even one day where they believe that the behavior is a manifestation of the student's with a student's disability. That would be unlawful in that case to do it even for one day. Once they understand that the behavior is a manifestation of the disability, they can't exclude the student on that basis. They do need to provide behavioral assessments and a behavioral improvement plan. Some students may need to be in a more restrictive setting for part of the day. They should be however, they should be looking towards finding ways to have that student be successful in more inclusive settings. So that should be part of what that student is working on and what the school is helping that student develop the skills they need. So But absolutely, I think schools get it wrong. They think they have a free 10 days. They should never suspend a student with disability because of the disability.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's where, you know, I'm sure my gut says it's easy to get a little murky maybe with people. You know, you have a parent who's upset that the kid, did something again. You know, oh, we've tried everything. We've tried meds and we've tried psychologists. And sure, let's try in school or out of school suspension. Maybe that'll help little Johnny. You know, I mean, you could sort of see where it's a very easy slippery slope for parents to accept that. That's just sort of my gut reaction.
Yeah, I think there's a stigma around behavior. And also, I'm a parent of two teenage boys. You know, I don't want to condone behavior that's not appropriate if they're, doing that in school. I certainly see it at home. But that's really besides the point, because it's not that we just tolerate the behavior or, try to ignore it or suspend them out of school. The whole point is that there's a whole range of responses that can help students behave better and addresses the misbehavior, doesn't tolerate it, but that don't remove them from the educational setting. And one of the leading reasons that kids drop out, and one of the reasons we're so concerned about discipline, is being suspended. Even being suspended once correlates with a doubling of the dropout rate in a statewide study down in Florida. It can increase the risk of juvenile justice involvement by threefold. And most of the time, kids are being left unsupervised at home, especially for these short-term suspensions. So, you know, if you're kicking kids out because you're concerned with, you know, they flashed a gang sign, well, one of the surest ways to push a kid into a gang is to suspend them out of school where there's no guarantee of adult supervision. So it really is, it's counterintuitive to think that just pushing them out of school is going to cure any problem. And the American Academy of Pediatrics, the National Association of School Psychologists, American Psychological Association, the National School Boards Association, and both the AFT and the NEA all agree that suspension should be a measure of last resort and not a frequent response to all sorts of misbehavior.
Mm. I want to ask about what then the parent's role could be in a proactive way. One of your recommendations from your paper, and we're going to be putting all this information out there as well, the out of school and off track overuse of suspensions in American middle and high schools. It says parents and child advocates request data on discipline from your school and districts. So is that something that schools should have in their manuals? Like is there a printout that most schools should be able to give to parents? That, okay, in-house suspensions are because of this usually, and out of school are usually about that. Or is this sort of a like shoot by the hip kind of thing that some schools do? What's the norm?
Yeah, so every school should have a code of conduct, and you know that's just a basic notice requirement. And especially kids with disabilities, there should be a clear code of conduct, and it should be something that parents and students can understand. And hopefully a lot of schools that are starting to reform their efforts are reviewing their codes of conduct so that they're, for example, in the whole state of California has stopped suspending kids in grades K through 3 for this sort of catch-all, you know, willful defiance and disruptive behavior. So that's a state code of conduct. Many states don't have a statewide code of conduct, so it's left to the districts. But and several districts, including Chicago, have also moved to eliminate, and Los Angeles eliminated all suspensions at all grade levels for this sort of catch-all disruptive behavior. And as I mentioned, Chicago has also moved to dramatically reduce suspensions for minor offenses. Baltimore City stopped suspending kids for truancy and tardiness and saw their rates go down, their graduation rates increase. So there are lots of things around the code of conduct that can be changed, and parents should certainly get a copy of that and raise issues if it's a sort of draconian one. You know, if it's three strikes, you're out for being disruptive. There's no research to support that that's an effective policy or practice, and it is likely having a disparate impact on K kids of color and kids with disabilities. The other thing, though, is that if it's a student with disabilities, there should be a behavioral assessment and a behavioral improvement plan in place if a student, even if they're not have emotional disturbance. A lot of kids with disabilities may have behavioral issues that are connected to their disability, and therefore parents should insist that their IEP, their individualized education plan, includes how are these misbehaviors going to be addressed, and what are the supports and services? Will the student get counseling? Will they have a behavior management plan? What's going to be in place to support, you know, my child so that they can learn to be much more successful in a regular classroom environment? So there's a lot that schools should provide to parents and a lot that parents should ask. But the other thing, parents should ask for the data on the school and the district, because they may be in a school or district where the numbers clearly show they're really high and disparate use of suspensions. And then they're not alone, that means. And that they, you know, that there's strength in numbers, finding out who else is being suspended and bringing the issue to the school board or the superintendent as a group.
Got it. Interesting. So are all schools, even private schools, supposed to keep data on discipline?
So all public schools have to collect and report data on kids with disabilities and disciplines to the state, and then the Office for Civil Rights every other year collects separate data on the numbers of in-school suspensions, out-of-school suspensions, expulsions, referrals to law enforcement, and school-based arrests. Public schools, they're not under the same requirements in terms of what data that they have to report. They're in terms of any kind of federal or state requirement. But certainly if your son or daughter's at a private school, that's, I think, a reasonable thing to request. And then there's a concern about charter schools. Charter schools are public schools, and under any federal law, they have to report the same data as any other school. And there's a real concern that in some cases, charter schools may be discouraging kids with disabilities in particular from attending by either having a very strict discipline code that doesn't look at the manifestation issue and doesn't provide the emotional supports and the behavioral supports for kids with disabilities. And they may be subtly trying to push them out or discouraging them from even applying to attend if it's a school choice situation. So there's a lot of concern about that with regard to charter schools. But they are accountable the same way any other public school is accountable.
Absolutely. My goodness, this is huge. What is next for your organization on this issue? You've put out these reports. You've had some good press conferences. What's the next step?
So we're going to we continue to work with researchers to look at what's working and what's not, so that we're not just admiring a problem, but really proposing meaningful solutions that really work at the school level. In addition, we are going to issue a report on charter schools, another report on we're looking at corporal punishment. There are several, about half the states still have corporal punishment, and we're concerned about both disability and racial disparities there. We're going to look at school-based arrests and referrals to law enforcement and look for what's going on at the district level. We're really concerned that there's not enough data being reported or it's not accurate, so we have to sort of figure out how to overcome that obstacle and report on those districts that do have more accurate data so that folks have a real sense of what's going on. And then, you know, we work with states and school districts across the country to find ways to reform their practices in ways that really help everybody, helps teachers, helps kids stay in school. And that at the end of the road, it's really about improving the quality of schools and the school climate. So it's not about, you know, just keeping kids in school who are disruptive. It's really about improving school climate so that everyone is benefiting and that all kids have their right to an education satisfied.
Absolutely. This has been fantastic. Mr. Daniel Lozen, thank you for spotlighting this issue that so many people have known about but now is really coming to the fore. And what an incredible background that you bring as an educator, as a lawyer, as an advocate. So thank you so much for your time, and we're going to be looking for a lot more ink on this as the years come, it sounds like. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for covering the subject and for this coverage. It's really important to get this information out, and I appreciate your efforts.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So anyway, everyone, this has been another episode of the Mary and Melissa Show, Project of Inclusion Zone, and I am so pleased that I had the chance to speak with Daniel Lozen. We're going to be posting the info on his reports all over the place, online, on Twitter, and whatnot. But stay tuned on this subject and watch out for it for your own kids, because it's real and it's an issue and it's no longer in the dark. It's brought out to the light, and let's make sure we're on top of it. All right. Everybody, take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. And we'll close out. A little more Bobby Darin, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Mary and Melissa Show.
I'm gonna ship you back to Arkansas. Oh, yeah. It's gonna do that. It's gonna do that. When you see me in misery, come on, baby, see what I mean. Hey, hey. It's alright.